Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch for each week. Ben and I give you the insider's guide to property finance and money management. Mate, do you need to lie down on the couch?
Oh, because I've got a little bit of a croaky
throat. You got a lurgy.
I know. Well, yeah, lurgy. Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, mate, this travel stuff isn't good for us. It was me last week. Yeah, it's you this week. It'll be Ivis next week, but no one will hear from her because how many people say, we want to hear from Ivis, and then we give her the opportunity, and she gives us donuts. So,
she does
Ivis, there's people that want to interact with you.
Yeah, the Stig. They want to know more about you.
So, step up. Yes. Step up.
What have we got on today, mate?
A couple of things. I've got a public community announcement to an apology.
Oh, an apology?
Yeah, I do have an apology.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Wait. I'm sorry for rolling around with this attempt at a moustache. It's pathetic. I get it.
No,
and so I'm gonna throw it out there to our listeners. Just have pity on me. If someone could throw some money at our thing, Ben. Just throw $2, $1, $5. just a pity vote I'm going for. And so you need to go to the socials, Ben. You need to go on Facebook. So someone's and we're looking for the best heckle for me because a few people have started heckling, haven't they, Ivis?
Yes.
Asking if I've got the marker pen to colour in on the gaps. And that's all right. I'm happy. In fact, I'm encouraging. As long as they're PG rated heckles.
They pay for their heckle.
That's right. So, yeah, good point. Yeah. So we're going for $5,000, Ben.
We are.
Which is a big ask. So what we thought we'd do, you want to fill them in?
Yeah, sure. So effectively, if you give us a donation of $25 or more, we will send you a signed copy of our book.
We will.
We will pick up the cost of the postage. And we will get that out.
Hang on a second, Ben. Our book actually costs more than $25.
I know.
So you're saying that there's a good cause and some value.
Oh, there's a massive cause here. I mean, you know, my dad had testicular cancer, early detected, which is great. So he's all good now. But there's, you know, this is an important issue. So, you know, the money that goes all the way to helping research and also Beyond Blue, men's health in general. So it's an important topic.
All right. So there you go, folks. Go to our link. Go to our Facebook page. There'll be a link there. Donate $25 or more. And then just go to the comments on Facebook and just say donated. And then we will reach out to you. We'll get your address. We'll send you a book. It'll cost you nothing. We'll pick up the postage for $25 or more. Which also, if they're going to go to the point of $25, Ben, or more, just throw in that extra couple of bucks just for me, for the pity, all right? Just for the, because you look like you're, you know, you wouldn't be out of place with a sort of ape-handled motorbike with a leather
well,
jacket sort of cruising down the highway.
So moustaches, so we're embarrassing ourselves. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get rid of this thing off my lip as well.
I reckon you should keep it though.
No.
Just get the lamb chop that goes all around the side.
Don't like it. But it does raise a point, all of those people who have already donated, what are we up to so far?
Ivis is
1,700. So we're at $1,700. So there are people. We had a $500 anonymous donation.
Wow.
That is incredible. So thank you to that particular anonymous donator. And if you want to reach out to us anonymously, we will send you an anonymous book to an anonymous address.
Yeah, exactly. So all you need to do is go to Facebook on our page, say donated. And we will reach out to you and get your details.
And if you've given us more than $25, also reach out to us because we'll send you a book as well. So those people who already showed the initiative, we'll get a book over to you also.
Let's get them into the hand of the people. And if we hit our goal of $5,000, Ben.
Yes, Bryce.
I wondered why he was carrying that. He was waiting for that moment. We're going to do a special webinar.
Yeah, I'll do a webinar.
Working out your retirement gap.
Yep, how to work out your retirement gap.
So
I'll teach people the steps that you need to go through to work out what your retirement gap is so you can fill the gap in.
$5,000, folks. If we get there, come on. Let's get Ben working on that retirement gap. Now, there's a couple of things, Ben. We send out an email every week giving people updates on what we're doing.
Yes.
So the best way to do that is to go to the Property Couch and download the Money Smarts.
Yes, it is.
Program. If you haven't done that, you just got to do that. Leave us your email address and we'll keep you updated.
Join the community and we'll be able to give you some of that correspondence.
So we'll let you know when that webinar is. So, folks, there you go. That's a pretty good deal. Hey, We had someone write into us, Ben, and we thought we'd cover it off around hotspots in, sure. in our definition.
Yep.
And the question was along the lines of, hey, you guys say don't buy into hotspots, but then you talk about hotspots. and there was a little bit of confusion around that. And I thought it would be a good point to highlight that for us, what we don't like about hotspots is the umbilical cord that's attached to the person giving the advice around the hotspot. So yep. someone says, this is the next hotspot, and you find them. Then the next day in the paper, the magazine, or the media says, there's another one, and you follow that. What we are wanting to do is empower people to find their own hotspot without relying on someone else. So we want to be able to cut the umbilical cord of dependence on someone else telling you where the next hotspot is, because it's really... you can find a hotspot, but it's based yep. on some fundamentals, and usually where demand exceeds supply.
Yeah, I think you're right in the sense that just because some so-called experts made a prediction on a suburb, don't blindly follow that prediction. Mm. What it needs to be backed up by fundamentals. Now, obviously, you know, the fundamentals that we produce is through location score. Mm-hmm. And yes, very early on in our podcast, we always used to say, be careful of those hotspot predictions. But if they're backed up by the substance, and if an expert has recommended a suburb, go and investigate why. What was it that they were looking for? And are the fundamentals real in there, or is there an agenda? Because it's pretty easy to work out where there's an agenda. I just happen to have a block of apartments that I'm, you know, selling in that particular location. So that's what, you know, that's what our message is yes, there are ways in which you can pick locations based on fundamental research, which would be classed as hotspots. But don't just blindly follow those who are promoting that, because it obviously makes for good copy and good media, but it's got to be backed up by fundamentals.
And in full disclosure, we've actually used a hotspots headline yeah. to get, I mean, in a world of trying to get people's attention, their eyeballs, yeah, you know, we've it used works. It. Yep. But the point is the difference, and the answer to that question is, if you can learn how to identify the hotspot yourself, we're fully encouraging that.
We'll love to support that.
If you're dependent on someone else, that's what we're trying to help you avoid.
And use the fundamentals that you learn on this podcast and other ways and magazines, books, the whole thing. Mm. Put it all together, work out your fundamental analysis, and then you can find your own hotspots.
Mindset Minute, Ben.
What do we got?
Today, and it's going to lead into what we're going to talk about as the main body of our podcast good. Today. But there's safety in delaying, because that means you never have to hear the criticism. All right.
Yep.
So every day that you don't execute on your plan, you prove your naysayers are right. And every day that you don't execute on your plan, you prove your supporters are wrong.
Mm.
So
I love it.
For someone who wants to invest in property, who wants to build a portfolio, they have to be aware that you may get some criticism, and you may have to step out of the safety of not hearing that criticism by actually taking a step forward. So for me today, just remember there's safety in delaying, because that means you never have to hear the criticism. But don't use it as a reason to not get going, because as I said, if you don't, you prove your naysayers are right. And if you don't, you prove your supporters are wrong.
Yeah, and I'm not just for people who are accumulating wealth through property, but what about first home buyers? You know, if you're in that millennial environment and everyone else is enjoying themselves and you're being, you know, controlling your money spend so you can save a deposit for the house, because that's the number one challenge for people getting into the market, other than obviously the value of property, the number one challenge that we see in the research is that they can't save for a deposit. So that's the sort of thing, you know, the peer group pressure of going out and spending today is real. So I think it works not only for investors, but also for home buyers as well, yeah. in terms of what that looks like. So I think that's a great one, mate.
Here, so ponder that for the week ahead, folks. Today we're gonna maybe ruffle some feathers today.
We're gonna unpack.
We are. We're gonna we're gonna tell you some reasons why you're not rich.
That word rich.
Rich.
I want to talk about that word rich.
Mm.
It's one of those words that I don't like.
No, neither do I.
It's because, I mean, it's... No, it's
of all the words, financially free is the only one that I don't cringe over, because wealth creation I cringe over, like, just because we've been doing this for so long and there's so many charlatans, but financial freedom is...
I reckon, the rich word, you know, the richy rich, remember that
I
show?
Love that, I mean,
it was
I love
great,
that
but comic. The opulence and the, you know, the excessiveness of it all, that's not why you invest. That's not why, I mean, you know, I love the financial security message. So, you know, to be able to, you know, live life on your terms really resonates with me, but it's not so much that the opulence and the excesses are what we're all chasing. You know, for a lot of us, we're just chasing the ability to replace our income. You know, if you think about that, and if you think about using that as a benchmark for how much money you need in retirement, you know, replacing that income is really good. So yeah, you know, but it obviously it's a great headline. We come back to that point. We obviously want people to listen.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with a big headline.
Yeah.
And that's what that headline is. But we're going to sort of, you know, let's unpack them, Bryce, in terms of the 10 reasons why you're not rich.
I'm going to kick it off with a personal experience, which I suffered in early 20s when I had a little bit of material success that wasn't yet embedded in long-term success. I spent money like I was rich. I remember I lived on the Gold Coast when I was in that early part of building up my...
The coast with the most.
Coast with the most, yeah. And I was... it was Tinseltown. But I lived in a little penthouse that was overlooking Lake Orr down in Varsity Lakes that had the buildings of Burleigh Beach in the distance.
Beautiful, yeah.
I bought a Harley.
So you went through your midlife crisis in your 20s?
I went through my 20 life crisis. But back then I couldn't grow the moustache. So
oh, no.
I needed...
You need it now. You're good now. You can go and get the Harley now.
It's questionable whether I... Check it out on Facebook whether I can or can't in my 40s. But so I was living for today. My properties went up in value, and I actually thought I was like a legend at the time.
Yeah.
And I quickly learnt through some mistakes and some life lessons that and I actually look back at that time and think I'm really glad I went through it because I'm sharper now.
Yeah.
But so for me, the number one is you spend money like you're rich and you live for today, but you haven't planted enough foundation to make it lasting.
And it's fascinating. I mean, obviously, we're in a privileged position as advisors where we do get to see people's financial position. And I can tell you, Bryce, that I think I've said this on the podcast before, but we've seen families with five kids have more wealth than, you know, couples with no kids and earning three times the income because they haven't lived like they're rich. We've also seen people with very high incomes with all the successes, you know, the modern European car, the great rental accommodation or whatever, and they've got not two pennies to scratch together other than the money that they've borrowed.
Mm.
Because when they do go out, it's the $150 bottle of wine.
Mm.
It's the best restaurant in town.
Mm.
And that all bodes well if you want those experiences. But the reality is they're going to have the shock of their life come retirement. Well, they won't even be able to retire.
No.
They will be working till they're 80.
And they're going to fall from a higher...
Correct.
...from a higher place.
So there's going to be a real anxiety point that they're going to have to, you know, work through unless they start doing something about it now. So I think it's good.
Do you remember the cash flow board game from Robert Kiyosaki when they kicked around in the early 2000s?
I didn't come across it, but yeah, tell me about it.
Well, the idea was that it was, to get to passive income, so your income exceeds your expenses.
Yep.
And the idea was everyone thought that they wanted to land a doctor's card because they had a high income,
yeah.
But it had related higher expenses as well. So it might have been easier to get out of the rat race, which was the idea of the game,
yeah.
If you're a teacher, because your expenditure reflected that.
Yeah, good.
And I remember I was talking to someone, one of the producers that I worked with on the show, she referred me to a friend of hers, and he was a doctor on $800,000. And I remember ringing him going, where does your money go? He goes, I don't know.
Mm.
He goes, I go to Bali a lot, I surf a bit. And I said, so there's almost like that threshold where there's...
Do you travel economy or do you travel...
Yeah, business, the family goes all the way, they're over to Aspen.
There it is.
But there's that threshold at the bottom where basic survival is tough.
Yeah.
And then there's a sweet spot just once you get past that. But once it seems like when you get to excessive amounts, they don't necessarily accumulate at any better rate than the people in the sweet spot, even though they're on better income. So you're right in terms of it's not an income. So Robert Kiyosaki did in the game, it's about how much you trap, surplus you trap, and how quickly you can get your income to exceed your expenses.
Oh, you just reminded me of another story where, and probably about 18 months ago, we had someone come into the office and they're basically saying, hey, look, this is my situation. Why does a mate of mine, who's a tradie, have more wealth than me? He's got more properties. He's been working with you guys. I earn twice as much as he does. And yet well, let's start this story.
Yeah.
You know,
he sits at the outer, at the footy rather than the MCC. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that is, is that how it's done? Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Mm.
You're not living for today. Mm. You basically got to put something away for tomorrow.
Mm. Ah, very good. All right.
Which is a good segue into point number two, Bryce. And that is you don't have a well-constructed plan. I mean, if you're not planning out what it's going to look like, and I'm using the words well-constructed here, because if I ask you, mate, have you got a plan to going to retirement? Oh, yeah, I've got a rough idea. I'm going to, you know, just make a few investments, and once the kids are out through school, I'll, you know, and once the mortgage is paid off, I'll just start to do some investing. That's not a plan.
Mm.
That's an idea,
mm.
you know, in terms of how that looks. So a well-constructed plan needs to work through the process of we're going there before, cash flow management, borrowing power, asset selection, or whatever it may be in terms of how you put that together. So if you don't plan to become what you plan to become, then you're less likely to break through and have that financial security that you will really be focused on when you get later in life.
I see that acutely in my role compared to yours, because everyone wants to go to the guru property investment advisor of the year over here, but for me, they just want someone to buy them a property, right?
Yeah.
So my discussion is always, so what are we buying? And well, I've got borrowing capacity of X. I said, yeah, but that's not my question. What do you want to buy? And I said, well, what do you want me to buy? I'm like, well, to be honest, without a plan, let's just lick our finger and put it up against the wind, because, and I've used this analogy on the podcast before. It's one that you and I've shared. It's if someone comes to a buyer's agent and they want them to buy a property, it's akin to them asking someone to build them a house, right?
Mm.
And they will build them with beautiful craftsmanship. But when we're finished, they might have got the rooms in the wrong orientation, not taking advantage of the block size, not taking advantage of the kids getting older. So therefore, if we take a step back and go to the architect and the project manager, then we'll get a better outcome of the house. The amount of times people come to me and say, and I have that discussion with them, and it lands,
just,
and they get
just
it.
Just buy me the best property, mate.
But they just go, exactly. Yeah. They go, but maybe I'll do that later. I just want to buy something now because they've just got this money burn. You know, they've got a borrowing capacity. The money's burning in their pocket. They just want to do something. And let's be honest, it's better than not doing something.
Yeah.
It's not meant to
definitely.
Do.
Yeah, definitely. We want people to take action.
But taking that investment into that, just that early planning phase, means that $1 million borrowing capacity might mean we only spend $700.
Yeah.
And buy another one in 2 years' time.
Or the reality is that we're going to have a change in that cash flow coming in because, you know, we might have a kid or two. And so that's why it's like, oh, just buy me the best property. It's like, well, the best property today, if we gear you up to that higher level, you may have to sell it in 3 years' time because you can't afford it.
Mm.
So I do need to have a look at your runway because I will adjust whether we go for a growth asset or a balanced asset or a yield asset purely based on that.
Mm.
So that's interesting. That's a good one, mate.
All right, on the plane right over to the States, I watched Becoming Warren Buffett for the third time, Ben.
Well, and it's always good.
I'm fascinated just because the man with extreme wealth, just remember the bit where he goes and if the market's up, he'll get a $3.70 meal at McDonald's. If the market's down, he'll get a $2.70 meal, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I just find his mindset fascinating,
yeah.
Given that he's lived in that same house since 1958 or whatever it was. And so for me, the number one thing I always get out of Warren Buffett is he's got 1,000,001 quotes that you can go to the bank on, but he got 95% of his wealth up after his 50th birthday, 99% after his 50th and 95% after his 60th.
Yeah.
So time and compounding. So for me, the reasons you're not rich is you don't get in, you start too late and you don't let compounding, because the way compounding works is you need more time. If you've ever seen a graph, the best part of the compounding is at the end of the graph.
Yes.
And if you don't have enough life cycle to get there. So for me, there's no urgency in starting. So you start too late.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the reason for that, Bryce, is that human behavior is that because we can't see it, or because the numbers projected seem ridiculous on a page. I mean, we do it here. Like, you know, we do 40-year projections, 50-year projections, and, you know, it's coming up with $20 million on a page, and people go,
really?
Really? Mm. Is that plausible?
Mm.
Well, you know, we only need to go back to the 70s when we were putting $15,000 for a house on a page, and that power of compound. And obviously inflation is in there as well, so there's some inflationary nature associated with that. So the reality is, well, what if it did come true?
Mm.
What if you did start and then what versus starting later? You know, if all the wealth is made in the last few years of the power of compounding, well, yeah, get started.
Get started.
You know, because a lot of people, I'll just put that off. I'll just wait 5 more years. It's not the loss you make in that first 5 years. Like, oh, it wasn't too much. You know, I know you invested $100,000 and it's only in 5 years, it's only $160,000. I'm going to start with my $100,000 5 years later. Let's see where we get to. Well, where you get to is staggering in terms of the difference, because that extra 60 that's also getting compounding on it over a 20, 30 year period is frighteningly powerful. Oh. So we always make sure that people look at that.
I always think the best way to think about that going forward is to discount it going backwards. Like, go 15 years ago and halve the median and see what it was, and then go 15 years and see if that's roughly what your grandparents paid for their house.
Yeah.
Because they were thinking exactly the same thing at this point in time that we're currently in.
Mm.
So, yeah, no. So another reason why you're not rich, Ben, is because you don't sort of understand that compounding kicks in the longer that you're in the market. So.
Yeah. Look, the next one, I see a little bit of this. Not a lot, because a lot of the people who come into our offices are changing their mindset. But if I'm talking to people at, say, a public event, I get a bit of this, but I just won't be able to do it.
Mm.
It's not really for me, is it? I mean, you know, do I have the talent? Do I have the ability? I mean, I'm simple-minded. Like, things overwhelm me. There's all these excuses, so many excuses. And it's really important that we focus in on, just stop the noise. Just get focused in on basically what's possible.
Mm.
And because I just, the excuses, and we do it in other parts of our life as well. I'll start my fitness campaign, I'll start my diet when there's always these excuses. So have an honest, hard look at yourself, and you've got to say, no more excuses, no more procrastination, no more what ifs, oh, the market's overheated, oh, it's not going to work for me, oh, now's not the right time, because they're all simple excuses. So that's one of the reasons why you're not in a financial position that you should be in.
Yeah, mate, here, I agree. Recently, we were talking to a client who had given us a firm number, Ben, on... so they weren't giving excuses. They wanted to step up to the plate. But they gave us, I won't pay any more than X, right?
Yeah.
And like, that was, you know, I said to the team, I said, that's interesting, because we're the expert of what's going on in the market, and yet they're giving us firm figures. But we have to look for the secondary reason what's going under there.
Yep.
And they had to step up. They had to back themselves. And so that was the scary part, that up until that point, it was a theory. And then now we're asking them to execute on that. And, you know, a buyer's agent does a lot of things to get their client to the point of saying yes. But I reckon the most important thing that a buyer's agent does is help them say yes. Because procrastination is unbelievably expensive. Just ask Warren Buffett.
Well, you make a really, really powerful point there, Bryce. So I'm assuming in that particular case, they had more to spend, but because they were conservative, so
we unpacked what was going on.
So
we get that you've got to step up. We get that you've got pressure from your family to make sure you get this right. We know that there's more going on here. And in the end, he said, okay, let's do what we've got to do to get it.
Yeah.
So, but whenever I see someone draw a line in the sand, I always say to the team, we got to down the tools and we got to unpack some layers here, because there's a bit more going on. You know, peel some layers of the onion off, because right now it's not about price.
Yeah.
It's about backing themselves and not having any more excuses, and they've got to, and now's the time.
And look, I mean, you raise a good point to me. What comes to my mind there is that planning piece as well. So if they're procrastinating or conservative or have excuses as to, because if the numbers show that you should, say, buy a $700,000 property and you can easily afford it, but you're only willing to put $400,000 on the table because of your, you know, your concern and your nature, and you'll give me all these excuses why I want to be conservative, the reality is you're robbing yourself of potential. So that is also the power of that planning piece, is, you know, once you know those cash flows and you forward project those cash flows, you could actually transform that. I mean, you know, I can, a good example comes to mind, another doctor friend of mine. And, you know, I caught up with Matt a while back and I said, you know, you've lost $1 million.
Mm.
And he's gone, what do you mean? I said, well, it's been 7 years since we had, you know, we caught up New Year's Eve and you haven't done anything around that, you know, next property piece. And he's gone, is it really $1 million?
Mm.
And I said, well, let's just work on some numbers of what you could have bought at that time. And now the money wasn't everything to Matt, and that's great for them. But the point I'm making is that there's money left on the table.
Mm.
Now, that could have been the beach house that they ultimately bought. Could have been a better beach house. Could have been two or three streets closer to the beach, in their beach house. So all of these things are, and that's my job. I mean, as an accountability partner, as someone who I'm looking after, or, you know, anyone else for that matter, that's what we have to do. We have to We have to tease out of them, and we have to be honest with them. You know, at the end of the day, this is truth serum in terms of whether they're all excuses. John, Harry, Mary, Joanne, whatever, they're all excuses. Let's cut the excuses out. The fundamentals are there. We make the invisible visible for them to be able to see that, and that's what you need to do in your own personal
affairs. Let's flip on its head someone who says they're risk averse, Ben. So they've assessed the risk and they've decided that they won't go ahead. Well, let's challenge them. Have you actually assessed all of the risks, or have you only looked on one side? Because actually, what's the risk if you don't do it? What's the risk to your family? What's the risk to your retirement? I mean, we caught up with someone recently who's fully aware that they're running out of time to actually provide for the family in retirement because they didn't do enough early on. So the challenge to the listeners is, if you're risk averse, are you checking both sides of the risk equation? Because sure, it's risky to add some debt to the equation. It's risky to have your partner or your spouse saying, are you sure you know what you're doing? All that sort of stuff. But what's the risk if you don't do it, man?
That's right. So, and you can see our passion coming out in this topic because, you know, we're absolutely privileged and honoured to be able to get to meet with people. And it's a big humbling experience when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of their money. And you're making calls on it. But we have the wisdom to then pass that knowledge on to you, the listener, to be able to sort of make informed decisions and build that knowledge base.
Well, the next reason that people, Ben, aren't rich is, this would be no surprise to anyone, but not seeking professional advice, not taking input from people who can counsel you wisely as to how you should steward your money moving forward, and being clear of a conflict of interest with the agenda that's in the right place of the client. Not taking professional advice.
Yep.
We've said it before, Roger Federer is on the court on his own when he's on the fifth set, with two match points, or he's trying to save one. He's there on his own, but he's there because of a team of people that have helped him get to that point so he can make good decisions under pressure in that moment. The same with the world's best golfers. The people who look like they're doing it on their own are surrounding themselves with not only wonderful people in the craft that they're getting paid for, but, you know, we saw from Andrew Bogut. He's got a team of advisors around him as well, even though he's in a team sport, but largely individual craft that he's doing.
Yep. And we talk about the sporting analogy because we're sport nuts, and congratulations to the Socceroos for qualifying for the World Cup. But the point we're making, let's put it into business context. Even the best businesses have boards. They have advisory people. They have stewards who are doing that. So success leaves clues. And so why, you know, if business was all about one person making judgment calls constantly by themselves, what would they be? Probably not businesses. You know, so having that knowledge source around you. And so obviously this podcast is about building that knowledge, but lean on and take your advice from people who have trod that path and gone that journey or have qualifications in that area. Don't get it from Uncle Bob at the barbecue who sits back and has opinions about everything.
Hear, hear. All right, you got another one for me?
Yeah, so this one here is an interesting one. It's this sort of ignorance and in denial. So we talked about excuses before.
It's a river in Egypt.
Denial?
In denial.
Oh, I knew you'd go there. In denial. He's good, isn't he? He comes up with this gold.
The thing for the listeners to know is that's where I've peaked. They don't get any better.
Yeah, he's got one for every topic, hasn't he? Obviously, he's a one-man band, that's for sure. He needs to seek some professional help.
Professional advice. Who needs enemy when you've got friends like all mate?
That's right. All right, so ignorance isn't bliss when it comes to money management. Okay, putting your money in a bank account and letting it sit in a bank account earning 1.5% or 2% return on your money, that ignorance is costing you your wealth creation ability, and that's why you're not richer.
The ostrich in the sand, Ben.
Yep.
Because people often don't even, they're not even aware that this even matters until way too late.
Yeah, there was a particular couple several years ago who came into the office and they said, but we're not in a position to do anything, are we? You know, no, you are, and this is that. But no, we're not. I mean, look, we can't do this, can we? I mean, no, it's impossible. It's impossible. So the complete denial. They were just basically like, it was just one of these experiences. Like, well, if you're going to take that view, you're absolutely going to not get there. You know, if you're going to completely stay in this sort of glass half empty mindset, you're going to be, you know, so I think it's important that, you know, and I talk about this and I sign off with knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
Mm.
And that is about accepting the fact that you don't want to be ignorant when it comes to managing your money.
Well, it's sort of a segue to another point around why you're not rich is the susceptibility to a get rich quick scheme. And we've talked about outsourcing the understanding. You can outsource the execution, but don't outsource the understanding. Now, the amount of times, you know, we've heard it anecdotally, we're so numb to it now, but the amount of times you receive the phone call at night, do you have a job? Do you have any equity? Yes, yes, bang, you've just lit up the other side.
Let me come out to you.
Someone's going to come out to you. They come into your house, someone's crafted at saying the things in a way to make you feel like you're inadequate and you don't have enough, and there's time is running out. They create the scarcity. They wheel out. They wheel the next person in who's about to. And this can happen in your own home. It can happen in a hotel where they put on a big seminar. But ultimately, people want to believe in the get rich quick scheme, and the amount of times that we've seen people come unstuck on that is too many to number.
And it's not just in property, Bryce. I mean, at the moment, there's, you
Bitcoin.
Know, yeah, there's currencies, there's cryptocurrencies and all this type of thing. We're just, it's the Wild West out there in terms of that type of thing. And there was, you know, promotions for ATM machines. Now, I'm not saying ATM machines are a bad investment because I don't know enough about them, but when I see data coming out from the likes of the banking association saying that they're decreasing, and I know that phones are going to basically be paying devices, and everything's moving to digital in terms of, you know, we won't necessarily have to have potential hard currencies into the future. Well, what do I need an ATM machine? I mean, why did the big banks basically say that they would do, you know, free transactions on ATMs? It's clear that they're going to be less and less and less, and their revenue is falling. I mean, I think it's as much as 30% decline in terms of use of ATMs. So people are getting better at moving money. Open banking will make that a big reality in the next 2 or 3 years as well. So if you've gone and bought a couple of ATM machines, people telling you that, you know, they're roads to riches, and now those ATM, all of the big banks machines are free to use. So there will be a market for them in convenient locations. Like, you know, I'm not going to walk miles and miles away. So markets and all that, where people might want to have cash, you know, in your local, you know, farmers market, those types of things. But the reality is, these are examples of people spruiking these big returns when the fundamentals and the business case may not be adding up.
So for all of our clients who are listening, Ben, we're here to declare we are a get-rich-slow company. We are a get-rich-slow company. So if you want to get rich quick, don't come and talk to
us. Don't come and talk to us.
Yeah, exactly. Got another one for me?
Yeah, mate, I'm talking about budgeting doesn't work. We've gone on to this, you know, this topic before. It's really, really clear to me that that it doesn't work. We've developed Money Smarts as a solution that is simple.
Automation.
It's automation. And it's automation in the sense that, no, you don't necessarily need bank feeds. You don't need live reading of your money. You don't need to have that. Now, the world is changing, and so will Money Smarts over time. But the fundamentals are real. You work out what you want to spend on living and lifestyle, and then you allocate that money to spend on living and lifestyle, and you trap the surplus, and you put it to work. Just tracking how you spend money does not change human behavior when it comes to money management.
Key words, put it to work, what you just said.
Yep.
And most people don't do that, do they? Because they start off thinking there's $1,000 at the end of the month. They get to the end of the month, there's only $20. They say, I'm still in the black, so it's a positive month, and they move on.
Yeah, they think that solvency is basically, you know, being good money managers, and that's not the case. So just budgeting alone is not going to be a means by which you are going to accelerate your wealth. Budgeting is important. Trapping surplus cash is important. But the smarts are in basically putting that money to work.
Very true. So I think, you know, nice little segue if that resonates to anyone, to go and get our Money Smart system, Ben. Yep. It is free. We should charge hundreds of dollars for it. We should. Because price is what you pay, value is what you get. The people who have written into us and said that they've implemented the Money Smart system, Ben, and it's made an enormous impact on their life. It's just like there's huge value in that. We're giving it for free. So
$33 billion in credit card debt in Australia, mate. There is a problem with people believing that the money on that plastic thing in their hand is theirs. So we, you know, it's a duty of care to make sure household debt's growing. So, you know, we've talked about, you know, good debt, bad debt. All debt's bad in a sense.
Mm.
But the reality is you want to have some debt that's productive.
Mm.
And if you can get debt productive, it's really important.
Well, I'm glad you said that because for me, the next one is that people just have that fear around it. That's normal.
Yep.
Generations before us said that you should pay cash for everything. But if you focus on the zeros, you're going to get intimidated. If you focus on the servicing of the zeros, you're going to get less intimidated. So if you focus on the fact, I've got $1.5 million worth of debt, that's scary. But if you focus on the fact that I've got X amount of dollars committed per month to service that debt and you've got this much income coming in,
yep.
it becomes more manageable. So you can't save your way to retirement, which is an extension of what we talked about on the previous one, the budget. But if you can't save your way to retirement, you need to find some form of leverage, and that leverage, unless you have a lotto inheritance or you're going to get into some debt. So being afraid of debt, you need to overcome that. I've told the story in this podcast a couple of times. The kid in the park, remember the one in the playground?
Yeah, yeah, it's a classic.
We're so poor, we owe the bank $5,000. And the other ones, we're so rich, we owe the bank $5 million. It's just a paradigm shift.
Yep.
And understanding, we did it for REA, the realestate.com
yep.
Video, where there's three types of debt: horrible debt, tolerable debt, productive debt. You need to understand the three definitions of those so you can feel comfortable with being in debt.
Yeah, and you know, businesses do it. I mean, you know, again, success leaves clues. If I'm in a business, and I think I've used this before again, but I like to, you know, hopefully it keeps, you know,
repetition is the mother of learning.
Very good. So Qantas, right? Qantas need to buy these aircrafts. They are expensive things. They are in the tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, these things. So they work out to sort of say, okay, we're going to put a portion of cash in and then we're going to take some on finance. And so the component that brings those three or four planes that come to Australia, and then they're going to fly those planes around, and they need to work out what the occupancy is, how many people I'm going to have seats running those sectors, how much freight money I'm going to get. And there's a bottom line there. And if that bottom line is good enough to justify, then it's worth investing and borrowing that money. BHP sit back and look at a mine project and they say, this is a $600 million mine. So they'll go to their funders and say, hey, okay, well, we're happy to put in $200 million of our cash or $300 million, but we want to fund the rest in terms of the construction and so forth. And then the cash receipts and the cash flows from the sales of the raw materials will then help pay that off and pay money. So it'll cover the interest costs and then also have a little bit of extra. Then we're able to pay the whole debt down and this thing will become a cash cow.
Mm.
So all of the things that we're doing in terms of personal wealth creation are based on fundamental return on equity and simple business philosophies around how you execute. We're in the business of property investing. When we're in the business of property investing, we can use those things sensibly. It's when we get greedy that we get too exposed to debt, or when we don't do our preparation and our cash flow preparation, where we overreach, and that's when we can end up in the red.
So understand, folks, well said by Ben. Understand, horrible debt is for debt that you use to buy things that go down in value. Mm-hmm. Credit card debt, store debt.
Holidays.
Don't
go on holidays on credit. God.
Yeah,
that's dumb. That's people doing dumb things.
Oh, mate, the pain when you get back realizing you've had a good time and then you've got to pay it off. That's horrific. So horrible debt, avoid that. Tolerable debt is typically for the family home.
Yep.
Hopefully it's going up in value.
Correct.
But you're the only one paying it off, so it's tolerable. Yep. And then productive debt, income producing assets that you can put into the portfolio to ultimately create that passive income that we're looking for.
Mate, and I thought I'd round it off. I know we've touched on excuses and ignorance and in denial and so forth, but this is the big one for me. It is all about a defeatist mindset. So before I start, mentally, I'm not ready to get underway.
Mm.
So sometimes we call it procrastination. Sometimes it's a lack of confidence in moving forward. So, you know, if you could just visualize this concept of a big valley, a big gully, and we're going to call it the gap. Now, ultimately, our job is to work out what is that gap inside it. Is it a knowledge deficiency? Is it an experience deficiency? Is it a confidence piece? Is it a awareness piece, all of those things. If you can continue to build that base of knowledge up, you'll move those walls in, and then you potentially can leap and make that confidence thing. Because that is what it is for me. A lot of this is going to come down to mindset. And we've talked about, it's up to me. We've got to take ownership of having some level of knowledge, to be accountable. And when we're working with professionals, we also want to hold them accountable too. We should be able to ask confidently, dumb questions, because that's what you're there for. I always say to anyone that I'm talking to, no such thing as a dumb question. Mm. When it comes to your understanding, if we have to cover off on things two or three times before the penny drops and you get an understanding of what we're talking about, perfect. Because that is, we're building that knowledge. So I really do think it's important that you don't have a defeatist attitude. You don't have that wrong mindset. Because if you can get that mindset right, man, you can climb mountains. Mm. You can win Australian Opens. Mm. You can do incredible things when you're in that zone of belief and confidence in what you can do.
And I agree. And so for people, they need it's one thing to say that, but how do people actually execute from where they are to where they need to be based on what you said? And it's just having an innate understanding that we're storytellers. We tell ourselves a story that we then go and act out and believe. It starts out as a thought. And so you talked before about the comparison between how can he do it and how come I can't do it. It's because it's the person who's doing it is telling himself a better story.
Yeah.
The story that I can do it. I've got a kid's version right now of telling my kids, if you think you can, you can. You think you can't. Either way, you're right.
It's a ripper. Yep, that's...
But the fundamental thing, and it's something that this is personal for me because I've met someone who I think I'll get him on the podcast, Ben, because it's amazing for our listeners.
Yeah, great.
But helping me better understand the story that I'm telling myself, because then I'll actually go and manifest that story. I'll say, that person treats me this way, and so therefore I'll go and create a set of scenarios where that person treats me this way, and then I'll go, my experience confirms that that's the way. But ultimately, I created it through my story. So if you're telling yourself the story that you can do it, there's a process in place, it's simple, I just follow it step by step, well, then you're going to get the outcome because you're telling yourself a better story than someone who said, my dad told me I was never going to do it, or that happens for someone else. That's important. But ultimately, if someone was to listen to the story that's running in your head and you let them see it, chances are they probably laugh at some of the assumptions you're making about yourself. They go, really? I don't see that about you. I mean, the classic, you would never have watched this, Ben, but...
Who knows?
There's a program on Channel 10 called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
No.
Where I didn't think so. Where basically there was some guys in New York who would teach people how to better dress. But ultimately what they would do is they'd strip these women down to their undergarments.
Yep.
It was highly appropriate. There was no of PG, X rating here. highly appropriate. And then they'd ask the person to go and say, now here's a lineup of women from different body sizes. You go and rank yourself where you think you sit in that. And it was intriguing because they would go and they put themselves between person number three and person number four. I'm going, are you for real? Actually, maybe between 7 and 8 because they're mentally
guys and girls.
Bigger. Yeah, guys and girls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then what would happen is they then go and move them to the actual based on the facts. So the story that the person was telling themselves is I'm actually, and for this it was a weight issue, I'm actually bigger than what I'm bigger in my mind than I actually am in the person.
Yeah, okay.
So the story they were telling themselves.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So the reality was different to the story they were telling.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, the mind is an incredible instrument.
Mm.
And if fed well and if it can achieve amazing things and with that little bit of confidence, you can affect change.
Mm.
And that is a really hard piece for some. Not trying anything means no change will occur. You're guaranteed of that. So being able to, train your instrument, your brain, to be able to be confident that you can move forward on things. And we all have moments of doubt, absolutely, in all things that we do. We're expanding the business. We've got a few things. So we're like, well, is this going to work? Well, if we keep thinking to ourselves and we keep having those negative beliefs, as opposed to, obviously what Chris Hedler tells us about, useful belief. We keep telling, and you just mentioned it before, in terms of the story that we tell ourselves, it's pretty powerful to sort of say, well, if it is to be, it is up to me. And if I continue to believe that story, then I can affect that change.
And have a think about what's the payoff, Ben. Because, the guy I'm chatting with is brilliant. He goes, What's the payoff for you if so? If I've got a defeatist mentality, there's actually a payoff. I'm actually getting something out of that equation. I can be a martyr and say things don't work for me, and I get sympathy, or I could have safety and not having to step up. There's always this secondary underlying thing going on for you. So I think that's a really good one, Ben. But you've got to overcome that defeatist mindset.
You really do, Bryce. And I think there's no substitute for quality experience either. I mean, what's a good example, bringing it back to property? The first property is the hardest one. Because, if you've got a concern and you've got doubt about debt and all of those things, it's like until you then start seeing the rent come in, and then all of a sudden it comes out of your day-to-day thinking and becomes into your week-to-week thinking, and then it goes into your month-to-month thinking, and then all of a sudden you're like, actually, I'm all right. I'm still alive. I'm getting out of bed every day. There's money in the bank. It's going okay. If you can get to that stage, and then you create that confidence to move forward. So I definitely think not every experience can be something you take a lot out. What am I saying? Every experience in life you should take something away from, whether it be positive or negative. You should always be able to find a positive, even in the worst thing that ever happened. And I know there's some horrible things, those shootings in America. How do you find positives in that type of story? They are hard. But if you really sat down to think about, well, what are some of the things that you can affect change on, whether that means gun control, now that's going to be your purpose and you're going to do those type of things. So I think in life, if people take that opportunity to be the best version of themselves, they are going to train their mind around positive thinking.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. So for our listeners, if you're thinking, life's tough, I can't do this, just have a think about what are you actually getting out of it? Dr. Phil says it perfectly. He goes, how's that working for you? Yeah. And people often say, well, it's not working for me. He goes, well, it must be working for you because you haven't changed it for the last 10 years. So something's working for you.
Yeah.
So find out, if you've got a defeatist mindset, how is that serving you? Does that mean you don't have to step up? Does that mean you don't have to stick your neck out? Does that mean that you like to be safe? What is the payoff for you for having that defeatist mindset? All right, so there's 10 reasons, Ben, that you're not rich.
Let's go through them, Bryce.
Go for it. You spend your money like you're rich. You live for today.
You don't have a well-constructed plan.
You don't understand the timing and compounding are really important to becoming wealthy.
You don't have excuses, or you do if you're not rich. So drop those excuses and stop procrastinating.
You don't seek the. You're a tennis player who doesn't seek coaching advice, Ben. Or put another way, you don't seek professional advice.
You don't build your knowledge up. Ignorance isn't bliss when it comes to wealth creation or growing rich.
The reason that you're not rich is because you are susceptible to get rich quick schemes.
I keep firing up about that one, don't I? Don't chase big gains. Play the long game. In terms of budgeting, isn't going to work for you just on its own. It's got to be a combination of budgeting, sensible tracking, and then saving and execution, putting that money to work.
Number 9 is you're afraid of debt. You haven't changed your paradigm around that debt is not all-encompassing. There are 3 types of debt, and you need to become friendly with one of them. You need to become okay with another one of them, and you need to avoid one like the plague.
And last is, we've spent a good bit of time on it, but defeatist mindset. Just make sure that you can build that knowledge, get that confidence, create a smaller gap so you can take that leap.
So there you have it, folks. Hopefully for some of you, that may have resonated 1 or 2, maybe even 3 or 4.
Well, let's hope so.
One of the things is, once we shine a light on something, obviously it can't stay in the dark anymore. We've got to face it, and hopefully that's helped some of our listeners face that. Life hack for me today, Ben.
Yes, mate. What do we got?
We went to took the kids to Blue Lake on the weekend. You know where that is, up your way?
Yeah, it is. Up there, back there. We used to actually ride our BMXs up there and go for a swim in summer.
Yeah. Well, mate, she's fresh in the middle. Nice and cold. So on the way,
how deep it is. They don't know how deep. Do they know how deep?
No,
it is?
But it's a fair way down.
Beautiful colour, because obviously it's a big deep lake.
Now, on the way, we decided that Andrea said to me, because we've got the kids. Sam's our youngest, 4. He can swim, but as long as he's got the flippers on. So we thought we'd get one of those sort of blow up lilos.
Good.
So we've got the Google map in, right? And then all of a sudden we said, well, we better pick one up on the way. So you can actually click on the, once you program the route, you can click on the actual route down the bottom, and then it'll ask you, do you want to search along the route? So we pop in Kmart. And then all of a sudden, it goes search, and then it pulls up all the Kmarts that are along the route for you. And they'll say, if you take this one, it'll be 14 minutes off track. You take this one, it'll be 6 minutes off track. You take this one, you'll be 3 minutes off track. So you can actually judge how much it'll go off your thing. So on the way home, we're hungry. So we put in the address for home, and then we type in grilled burgers. And it gives us the options for grilled burgers.
Yes.
Gluten-free options there galore. So that's my life hack today, Ben. So not only do most people... No, that's a big statement, isn't it? Not only do a lot of people like to use Google Maps, but now you can actually use it and create a detour along the way by typing in where you need to be.
So I'm wondering whether you can also say, hey, Google... can you tell us if there's a Kmart on the way?
Well, you probably could because you're an early adopter of that. I hardly ever use Siri.
I'm testing that out. So, you know, you can use Hey Google now, Ibis, as well as OK Google. Yeah, they've put that in there. So you can say Hey or OK.
The listeners don't know what conversation's going on here because she whispered to you.
No, no, she did whisper to me. But yeah, so we're talking about the Google Home, but it's also, you know, anything.
How's it going? That should be your life hack.
It's fascinating. But I'm waiting for their headphones to come out. I'm going to be an early adopter of their headphones when they come out to Australia because, my future belief is that phones will be obsolete. And it'll be the glasses and the earpiece.
Yeah.
So it'll be the image, the what are they called? The you know, when you sort of see a picture of a hologram.
Yeah.
Hologram image and also instructions via voice. That's all it'll be. To 10 years.
When that happens, mate, you'll catch me on the farm. You can just send me a postcard like the old days. I'll communicate.
We potentially could be able to do the recording in different locations because I'll be able to see you in my little glass piece. Because
that's scary.
It's very
to make sure I'm not running around in my jocks.
I'll definitely. Yeah, well, I'm only looking at your face, mate. I don't have any interest in any other part of your body. To be honest,
that's actually refreshing to hear. So thank you for that. And again, if the listeners are feeling awkward, we apologise for that also.
We like to ramble, don't we?
So if you're a first-time listener to our podcast, you've stumbled across us today, there's an entire backlog for you to go and check out. So 1.5 speed is the tip there. And of course, for those of you who have been listening for some time and you haven't got the Money Smart System, go to thepropertycouch.com.au. Leave your details. One of the other things, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Ben, you leave us your email address and we'll keep you updated. When your webinar comes out, you'll get updated there. When the new episodes come out, you get updated there.
Love it.
So that's what you should do and go and check that out.
Bryce, did you know?
Did you know that I almost forgot about
that? I thought you were even going to I was just going to segue in, but you've got obviously, now all of this is know that well, you've I'm turned your page over and your checklist is all.
I'm actually impressed.
I didn't even call you out on it, mate. No. You called yourself out. That's the honesty in the man. I completely forgot about it. So can I have my go now?
You have a turn. Make it quick. Ibis's winding's up.
She is winding's up. Okay, did you know Guinness Book of World Records? Oh, no, I'll leave that one to the end. So, because we're on mustaches, so basically, you know, Movember. So, the oldest recorded mustache was in 300 BC. Right. 300 before Christ.
Yep.
Basically, 300 BC. Now, Queensland University, so Southern Queensland University, also did a test on facial hair and how it can help prevent skin cancers on your face. So it can cover off and obviously give you a bit of UV protection.
Yep, that's...
So for all of those hipsters out there, boys, congratulations.
Yep. There's no sun getting through those thick mops, is there?
No, there's not. So that's all very good. And obviously our captain of the Socceroos got those three goals for us. On the way to Russia, here we come. Good stuff. And the last one, this one is the fascinating one. The longest moustache in the world measures how long, Bryce?
I know the answer. So
you do know the answer because I just told you. Right out. Guinness Book of World Records has an Indian man, which we'll put up on the website, on our socials or wherever it is on our socials. 14 foot long.
Really?
14 feet. So basically he's been growing it since 1982.
Fair dinkum.
So it's sort of, he rolls it up and then rolls it out. It sort of dangles.
Go and check that out, folks.
He could wrap it around his neck and use it as a scarf.
But imagine, it's all about money smarts because he's saved on shaving cream, on shavers, Ibis. Very always true. Got an angle.
So it's not a beard, but it's a bushy moustache. I'm talking handlebars, the best handlebars you've ever seen.
Well, I'm looking at the best handlebars.
No, these are ridiculous.
We might have to do an update today, obviously.
Yeah, we'll send a picture out there. Okay, so there you go, mate. So
did not know that.
So, but get behind us in November.
Yes.
$5,000 and I'll do a webinar.
Webinar for $5,000. Anyone who does 25 or more gets a book.
Free book. The book's $30 in the stores right now.
And if you go to the Facebook, our Facebook page, and just write donated on a comment, we'll reach out to you. We'll get your address and we'll send it out to you.
So, beautiful.
And if you are someone who loves the socials, Ben, the socials, you know, on the Ethernet that you call it.
The Ethernet.
At
World Wide Web.
World Wide Web. At The Property Couch. At Bryce Holdaway. At Ben Kingsley AU. Go and hang out with us. We'd love to say g'day. Say g'day and we'll reach out and say g'day back to you. So,
beautiful.
There, we covered it off, folks. So 10 reasons you're not rich. Why don't you overcome those reasons and become financially free, financially secure. And Ben, until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, Bryce, but only if you act on it.
Very wise advice indeed. All right, folks, see you next week.